much. Lovely to meet you, a crowd. I recall once reading in a very, very large venue to two people. And I wasn't the only one reading. There were whole lot of the other readers. Start with a poem called Midsummer Dreams. That kind of time of year. Midsummer Dreams, your letters are rare. Arrive after silent years, fragrant with old dreams and postcard scenes of a town I'll never visit. This year's letter lies half read between the marmalade and bread, but tonight, as always, I'll think of you beside the muddied stream, bottles cooling in shallow water as you pour your passion into Shakespeare-weighted words until the play is spent. Perhaps a song will pass your lips as I walk the groaning floor, pulsating son or daughter, and you tread unsteadily home to yours. And in the morning work with heavy head and light heart, while I wake and kiss my babies and long strong man, and then between the nappies and the milk, finish your letter and forget, until next Midsummer's day and night brings remembrance and regret. In for the kiss. All night she had watched the promise of his mouth caress moistured glass, tongue darting to savour the last traces of cider from his lips. Thought the night was theirs when they left the crowded bar and when they reached a quiet street and when he popped a mint in his mouth and when the key slipped into the unfamiliar lock, but when he squeezed her shoulder and said good night, and when he locked himself in the bathroom, she slid to the floor behind the bedroom door and whispered his name. And this one's called Gifts. It's about the most important thing probably that ever happened to me, which was to be taught to read. Gifts. All aunts brought gifts, but great aunt Bess carried words deep in her tapestry bag among the apples and lace handkerchiefs. After the staid family tea, her conjurer's hands would produce wallpaper, scissors, crayons, and with a song to start the dance, the blades would flash and paper dolls emerge. Colleeni agus Bukali inked across their linked bodies as we set them skipping across the kitchen table before the slow swirl into waltz time when they turned to become boys and girls. Then, while I studied, struggled to copy the words, she told stories of the children she had taught and Mr. De Valera who taught her to teach. Later, when I graduated from wallpaper and crayon to newspapers and nibbed pens, I learnt his stern features in news photos, knew they were wrong. See him dancing in the classroom, Bukali and Colleeni fluttering in his long pin fingers. This is a poem about visit to Cork when I was small. I came to stay with my grandmother when I was 10 and had a long summer in Rochestown. So I didn't get to come back when she died because unfortunately we didn't have a phone in the house and nobody told me. So the funeral took place in Cork and this poem is my way of saying goodbye to her instead of coming down. Flying in the breeze. Today, walking through the English market, seeing rainbow trout glistening in wooden trays of ice, and breathing the heady scent of oranges and fresh blooded meat, I am 10 years old again, walking tall because you told me to. Combing through bric-a-brac bargains, I surprise my reflection in a mottled mirror. Feel again your liver-spotted hands, tease tangles from my unruly hair, prod my sloping shoulders into straightness. offer a security I would grip long into adulthood. This poem is my goodbye. Someday I will return and set it free, flying in the breeze across Rochestown Strand, like your elegant hats, flung to flutter unwanted towards the thieving tide. I don't know about Cork, but in Dublin there's an awful habit of calling people names, making up nicknames for everybody. So if you go into the pub, everybody has their own nickname. I don't know what mine is, but I'll find out what it is. Naming names. Gamey eye could still watch women's legs and more pass along the path above his basement flat, thanking God each day for the social welfare glasses. Biddy all colours could care less that others mock her magpie clothing, mismatched colours layered against the winter cold of an Irish spring, laughs knowingly at the flimsy skirts and mottled legs of teenage girls on the prowl, and Nick the name sits and spits in the bar where he has passed his narrow youth, enjoying the laughter, raised fists and glasses of those who cheer his caustic naming of customers and strangers. Wonders on nights when pints are few what they christen him. This one's called 5 days into the new year. I didn't see my brother for 35 years and I spoke to him on the phone. So 5 days into the new year. I listen to your shy voice and picture the slow fall of sleet on streets I know only from soap opera, while you wish me happiness from your solitary flat. Years of unspoken words whisper in the static of our short, long-distance call, brother and sister, strangers on the line. This is a poem I wrote when I couldn't write a poem. I struggled with serious things, so I decided to write something silly instead. So, complaint to the muse. Oh, to write a poem without an eye in it. The eye that, even if unseen, pokes its skinny, leering head through every vent of spleen. And yes, just once that eye might lay an image of light across a verse to pierce the darkness the mind thrives on. I could pledge nevermore to mention night and death and life and dawn, but then I believe in promises even less than that ideal happiness which others make their life's sole aim. And if nothing else I gain by this complaint, I will admit I always longed to write a poem with an O in it. The curse. It was a summer Saturday in the year when men walked on the moon, and one generation separate from the black-cloaked woman whose picture frowned from the roof, from the wall of the gap-roofed flat, when Aunt Em came to visit, clutch bag filled with chocolate and cigarettes. Later, jealous of attention shared with children and chores, she wished on my mother's head all the sorrow and hunger of past generations. Later yet, I understood the irony in mother's smile, she who had known little else. This one is called A Desperate Man. I wrote it about one of my neighbours, so I'm hoping he doesn't start reading poetry. Find a book. A desperate man. He whispers his need of her at dusk, at dawn, in supermarkets, in car parks, in friends' kitchens, at parties, to strangers, to neighbours, to children, to bus conductors, to barmen, to bouncers, to sparrows in hedges. And once, in the middle of mass, wailed his desperation as the consecrated host shook in the priest's pale fingers. That day he went away, returned with stumbling gait, eyes darting in constant search of some unknown lover, and still we sometimes hear his soft voice loud with longing as darkness drenches the trees. I should have married her. Angel. She never cared for mirrors, would rather stick her nose in a book than wipe it, or sit watching garden birds bathe in dust than brush hair they could nest in. But once, all dickied out in patent shoes and satin dress, mouths dry from her first communion wafer, she heard a timid boy wonder aloud why an angel had visited, his words cancelling adult laughter. The Lady's Tale. This is about my grandmother in Cork, actually, so it's another poem about her. She used to tell me how she'd grown up when she was a child. So when she visited us in Crumlin in Dublin, as soon as she arrived on the road, all the neighbours would say, "The lady has come." And she was very elegant and beautiful. And this is how the Lady's Tale went. Stepping lightly across chicken-scratched earth, she senses mother's gaze willing her to walk straight-spined as the corseted gentry, knees bending in mock genuflection before the stale millet stench of the brooding boxes, soft hands outstretched to shit-stained eggs, egg money carefully hoarded, buys the requisites for a lady, black court shoes, linen hankies, and the annual ritual of virginal lace gloves and new clothes to greet the risen Christ. Greet too the flushed youths and middle-aged farmers, their faces laced with fear of being left to die alone on a windy hill where cattle sing an unmilked dirge, of never being boss or gaffer or daddo, for who in this place knew a man to call his father father, a title reserved for God or the parish priest, face set in perpetual sorrow at men whose belief that kneeling in the church porch praying for the pulse to open fulfills religious obligation. And here where the priest is the only man of learning, the lady in white gloves watches from the women's aisle the faces of potential husbands, eyes as lonely as her own, and when she migrates the 6 miles to the city, is not missed, made separate since birth by her mother's ambitions. Tap dancing in stilettos. I'm sure, maybe some of you are too young to remember the tin lino, which was very poor, and if someone came into your house wearing stilettos, that was the end of it. The blousy woman lit the room, preening at our childish interest. We who had never seen a mouth so scarlet, eyelashes so long, or a skirt so short. Tap dancing in stilettos, she patterned our gleaming new lino with her teetering rhythm, before tittering her way to the gate with promises of parties, trips to the flicks, and calling again soon. As she disappeared beyond the street light, a voice behind me said, "Bloody well far." This is one I wrote for my daughter when she was small, and the rest of my children have never forgiven me because they say, well, she got her own poem, we never got ours. And every time you go somewhere, people know the poem and hear it. So I'm never going to be forgiven, and they're all grown adults. Rachel. Carefully, she plants a sugar-smeared stick beside the garden wall. watering the hard summer earth with 5-year-old optimism. A week later, she uproots it and I watch for tears, but she smiles. Not enough vitamins. Next one will grow. Some evening may find me taping lollipops to a row of grimy sticks, wondering which is worse, to shield or break her dreams. Well, this is very unseasonal because it's a Christmas poem, but please put a penny. This is what happened one Christmas in our house. That year there was no penny in the hat, no turkey in the oven, but a cow's heart, vein-stripped, stuffed with pride-filled precision, aroma rising through the house with their laughter as Christmas morning visitors puzzled the provenance of our succulent, scented bird. That day outweighed previous feast days of drowsy, stomach-tautened plenty, as we dined on dark meat and multitudinous potatoes, united in temporary truce against daily family dissent, bracing ourselves against the coming of the new year. And another sad old poem. Some of you are getting a bit depressed, I'm trying to find something more cheerful. The woman at the bus stop. She knows, this woman crying at the bus stop, as she watches a man walk away. She knows as surely as the fear pulsing her veins that he will not pause in his long stride and glance back to where she stands, craning for a last glimpse as his broad shoulders diminish in the crowd. And she knows, this woman at the bus stop, that this may be the last time she watches his leaving, and she knows he does not understand this fear pulsing in the veins of a woman crying at a bus stop. Snake Charmer. Sunday's hours were as fixed as early mass, roast chicken and auntie's tea time tales of a man she almost married. Green-eyed I gazed at his parting gift, the gold snake binding her wrist, head and tail biting plump flesh. While still the height of her hand, I pictured him, rich, fleshily handsome, welded to his flash car. Later, as it hung loose from her dying hand, I knew he was cheap and mean-spirited. And this one's called Fear of Friendship. This is written for my friend Terry Murray, you may know her. Fear of Friendship. I surround myself with tokens, the chains around my neck, carefully framed photographs, stones and crystals glowing in a blue bowl, hesitate to leave the safety of their proof for the easy banter of the bar or harmonies hummed in the limbo hours of dawn. Feel the failure of my poor offerings, belated gifts, occasional visits, the rare dedication of a poem. Allow fear to flourish in midst of artistic solitude. Too many unspoken words, too many unfinished letters, too many deaths. I'll finish off here with the title poem of the book, Mowing in the Dark. Mowing the Dark. Mother found poetry in places others never fathomed. Summer days spent in the close comfort of city centre cinemas. Seaside trips in winter, foot stomp on the icy stones of empty beaches. Mowing grass under an inky pre-dawn sky, the rising green scent of invisible verse, seeping through our open windows, seeding our dreams. Thanks very much.